Hey, so have you heard the rumor that the restaurant guys are introducing a call-in component to the show? Well, guess what? It's true. So if you have a question for the restaurant guys or something you'd like us to discuss on the air, call us at 732-828-9459. Call anytime from anywhere. We'll answer your questions and, who knows, maybe even have you on one of our upcoming Restaurant Guys call-in shows. The number to call is 732-828-9459, 732-828-9459 from anytime or anywhere.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us on WCTCAM or RestaurantGuysRadio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm really good. How are you doing?
I'm okay, except I had a bit of a traumatic experience. In today we're going to present a show which was largely recorded in Vin Italy. It's in our series of shows recorded in Vin Italy. But in reviewing the show, some traumatic memories were brought back from our trip.
Traumatic memories from Vin Italy? There were none.
No, there were. I don't know if you recall the night we wanted to go out to dinner, and I was late. Way late.
Oh,
at the wrong place.
Oh, now I remember. I remember now.
Oh.
I remember now. We were meeting a friend at a restaurant, and Francis is like, I should be home in about 10 minutes.
Okay, now here's what I left Vin Italy, and I was traveling with a friend. I was traveling with my girlfriend, who was also in the wine business, came to Italy, and we left Vin Italy together, and Mark had left separately with our other friend, Jeff, and they went back to the apartment that we were renting in Verona. And I went and I caught on the bus, and I'm chatting, chatter, and I get on the 9 bus instead of the 6 bus. And I've been to Italy a lot of times.
Can I help you with something?
Yeah.
It was the 31 bus you were supposed to get on. No wonder you got on the wrong bus.
I was on, like, the 61 bus or something. Wherever I am, we're on the bus. I'm like, this doesn't look familiar at all. Yeah, so we get on.
Francis wakes up an hour later. He's in Venice.
I speak no Italian, okay? My girlfriend speaks some Italian, thank God. We chat with the bus driver, chatty chat, and he's like, oh, yeah, you're in trouble. And says, basically, get off this bus, cross the street, wait for the bus to go back. So we get off the street, we get off the bus, we cross the street, we wait in a while for the bus to get back. Meanwhile, we think we're supposed to meet this importer who is buying us dinner, I think, in a town called Somma Campagna, outside Verona. The bus takes us back, but we figure, you know, we'll get off before we go all the way back to Vin Italy and we'll find our apartment. We get off. We can't find it. We called you on the cell phone.
You were awful.
My Irish cell phone doesn't work, so I got to use my American cell phone. I got the bill. It was like $200 to call on the iPhone from Italy because I didn't pre-buy the minutes on it.
Don't then, use the iPhone in Italy. Just a heads up for everyone. Don't
you
use the iPhone in Italy.
Foreign minutes. Anyway, so, and then I'm using the GPS. That costs another $100 on the iPhone. And the directions kept saying cross the river. Little did we know we were on this little peninsula. The river was east and west. We kept going east. I can't find where we are. And I must say, we got home, what, two hours late?
Oh, ridiculous. We were ridiculously late for dinner. You were awful.
And then I made the poor guy who was buying me dinner, Doug, I'm sorry again, wait for us. And we kept thinking we were 5 minutes away. So we kept calling him saying, I'm almost there. I wasn't anywhere near almost there.
What you should have said is, Doug, I'll be there in a little while. I'm going the wrong way.
Italian time. But I didn't even know I was going the wrong way. Anyway, so I spent an evening lost in Verona. I think Shakespeare wrote a play about that.
Can I tell you, I was back at the apartment eating cheese and drinking wine. It really was not a big deal for me at all.
Except that the guy who was buying us dinner was waiting at a table. You know, they closed the restaurant behind us. Like, good night. Thank you so much. Get out.
We were, even in Italy, okay.
We were late for Italy. We were late for Italians.
Not just late for Italy. Francis and I were the last table in the restaurant. Even in Verona, Italy, which is amazing because, you know, in New Brunswick, New Jersey, you're the last table in a restaurant. Yeah, that happens. You know, it's 11:30 at night. You know, people pack up during the week. And so most restaurants aren't very crowded at 11:30 midnight when Francis and I are finishing our dinner.
During Vin Italy in Verona, they are. And our poor host, Doug, again, my apologies to Doug. But I will tell you, the one of the most interesting things I found about Verona was Juliet's balcony. That was one of the most interesting sights we saw in Verona. Did you know out there in listener land that in the city of Verona, if you're traveling around, you can go and visit the balcony. It's historical. There's a line to get in, and there's a balcony where it's Romeo and Juliet's balcony. It's where Juliet spoke to Romeo. What's the only problem with that, Mark?
Romeo and Juliet was fiction.
That's exactly correct. And so as we're standing there, we're thinking, you're idiots. you're all idiots.
It's the romance of it, Francis. Is there not a heart inside your in there somewhere, okay, even if it's three sizes too small?
You're mixing up your fiction. I have to tell you what I'd like to do though is I think if they're allowed to have a Juliet's balcony and like have tourists line up and have restaurants around it, we should have one in New Brunswick. Why not?
Just have
we'll call it Juliet's Balcony.
Juliet was supposed to have occurred in Verona.
We could have it in Verona, New Jersey. It would be just as real, okay? And this was a popular tourist attraction.
Oh, it's a tremendous, people leaving love notes to one another, to their long lost love. They leave at Juliet's Balcony. It's pretty creepy.
What a scam. You people are crazy. Crazy people from all over the world. Anyway. All right. So listen, we're going to go and take you now to an interview we recorded with a gentleman named Leonello Marchese. He is a producer of Italian wines, and we talked with him for quite a while. He was a gracious host, and his wines are very interesting. And I hope you'll find interesting what he had to say. Hello, everybody. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, live from Vin Italy, the world's largest wine conference. And we have the great good fortune to be sitting at a table with Mr. Leonello Marchese. Mr. Marchese owns three properties in Tuscany. He owns the Castello di Monasterio, Col di Sole, and Poggio alla Sugheri.
Perfect.
And
Leonello, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I didn't murder the Italian too badly on that, did I?
Don't worry. It's understandable. There is no problem at all.
When the Italians say don't worry, what they mean is yes, you did murder the Italian. That's what they mean.
We have never met before.
Okay.
But we have carried your wines in the past.
Thank you.
So maybe in a way we have met before. And I think your story is pretty interesting. I'm looking here at a picture of the Castello di Monasterio and all of your properties together. They're beautiful old properties.
Thank you.
And you know, I think people have this idea that especially in Tuscany, in the old regions of Italy, when there's a family-owned winery, that it must be something that's been in a family for many generations. That is not the case with you.
Correct. It's not my case. But I am in the wine business since 25 years.
So tell us how you got into the wine business and what you did before or during.
I get into the wine business in 1983. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you that I am a self-made man, mm-hmm, and born during the wartime. Mm-hmm. So God helped me in ideas. Mm-hmm. And one day I find out that one of the best products at that moment was to make money, of course, was to produce safety belt for cars. I start in 1973 to produce safety belt for cars.
Just as they were becoming mandatory.
I think it was a pretty good idea.
That's great.
Very good.
That's great.
And at that time, there was no car equipped in Europe with a safety belt.
Uh-huh.
So the market was completely virgin, and I get into the market very heavily,
uh-huh,
and I gain a lot of money.
Oh, that's great. And so you decided to throw it all away by opening wineries.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Not opening a winery, but the first idea was to invest money
right,
in the properties.
Yep.
And used to go in Toscana. I am from the north. I born in Milano.
Right.
Not in Milano, but in a village south of Milan. It's very famous, this village, because it's the country of the violin. Cremona.
Cremona. Uh-huh.
Where there are the biggest production of violin, uh-huh, in the world, and very famous Stradivari and Guarneri.
Uh-huh.
Very famous. So I produce safety belts, and I grew up in the countryside, and my dream was to have properties and have horse maybe. and drive around or ride with the horses, and used to go in Toscana, and Toscana at that time was for sale.
Right, so, sure. Very poor at that time.
Yes, yes, very poor. So a lot of money in the pocket, easy to buy properties in bankruptcy. And I put together three beautiful property, but all the property they were bankrupt. So I invest a lot of money. I renew everything. And due to the fact that I found in the property a lot of vineyards, I start to think about producing wine.
Now, I have to stop you there, and I have to ask you a question, because you made some fortunate business choices and some wise business choices. You decided to produce seat belts when there were none and they were about to become mandatory.
Correct.
You then bought land in Tuscany when nobody wanted it, but they were about to change their mind.
Sure.
But when you decided to make wine, did you, because I also know at that time, Italian wine was, there was a glut of wine in the world. It
Correct.
Was not, there was not a lot of demand for wine.
Correct.
Especially wine if it wasn't from a big company.
Right, and Italian wines were selling for almost
pennies.
No money.
They were
no money.
For pennies. So why, it sounds like those first two moves were good business ideas. Sounds like making wine had to be from the heart, because it doesn't sound like it promised to be a good business.
I think what Francis is asking is, how long did it take you to figure out that you could make more money on seatbelts than you could on wine?
You know that you have a motto in America that says, do you know how you can get $1 million profit in the wine business?
Yeah, how's that?
Starting with the $10 million.
Yeah. So was that your experience early
no,
on?
No, it was not my experience.
Oh.
Because I think I did the right way, the right things. Mm-hmm. I took seriously the wine business as a business.
Right.
Not as a hobby.
Right.
Okay? And in a few years, I became very famous in the wine industry at the point that... In 1994, a big pharmaceutical company and very famous all over the world, Procter & Gamble and associated with Procter & Gamble, came to me and said, Lionello, we won't buy you.
Why did the pharmaceutical company want the winery?
Just investment. Just investment. In the beginning, I say, no, sorry, it's my jewels, I don't want to sell the winery.
Right.
But then they asked me, why don't you look at the check that you have in the envelope? And Jesus, my friend, you cannot believe when I opened it, when I opened the envelope and I look at the zero.
A lot of zeros.
Lot of money. So I take the key from the pocket and say,
here you are.
And you are there. And I sold the property, but I can tell you, I'm not a Tuscan gentleman, but Toscana is like a drug.
Yeah.
Toscana comes into the blood.
Yeah.
And the wine is the same. And I signed a non-competition contract for 5 years.
Right.
But in the meantime, I start to look around and I bought this new beautiful property.
So in 5 years in one day.
Yes, 5 years in one day. And as you can see in the brochure, there was a monastero.
Right, monastery.
Completely destroyed and inhabited.
Uh-huh.
And because of the 5 years of non-competition, I start to rework in the monastero and I convert the monastero in a 5-star hotel. Okay.
You're a classy guy.
And in
1999, you like
the good
stuff, huh?
Thank you. And in 1999, I've been back into the business.
Uh-huh.
And I told you that from the 80 to 90, I have had a business in Denver, Colorado, and I produce items for car for General Motors.
Uh-huh.
And was another fortune. So I live in Denver for 10 years. And I make also another fortune. Okay.
So, of all the things that you've done, now is your focus primarily wine?
No. The most important thing that we still have is the seatbelt business.
Yeah.
We have I have a factory in Milano, and I have a factory in Czechia, Czech Republic,
right,
where we produce seatbelts for some companies.
So how involved are you in the winemaking? Who makes your wine for you?
Me.
Makes the vineyard?
I am the winemaker.
Really?
Yes. Piano, let's say step by step.
Right.
I became expert, and with the cooperation of peoples, and of course also one consultant,
Right.
I decided to be my winemaker.
That sounds like a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you.
So
yeah.
You said earlier that this isn't a hobby for you, that this is a business. But I think one of the issues that a lot of people get into, and we own restaurants and we run restaurants, that a lot of people have is when you get into a business with something that is your passion, like we have with restaurants and with wine, frequently people lose that sense of that we talk about sustainability. We talk about sustainable agriculture. Well, part of the sustainability of a business is that it runs as a business.
Right.
So there has to be some passion and there has to be some business. How do you balance those two things?
Yeah, you're correct very, very much, because I know a lot of people that they lose business and they lose money too. But if you have good people working for you, if you have good suggestion, if you have good people that give you their ideas and help you. But overall, if you are a good calculator and you make 2 + 2 = 4, you never miss. And I did that.
Yeah.
It sounds like you made 2 + 2 or equal a lot more than 4.
Equal 5. That was the
maybe,
real talent.
Maybe
I think.
2 + 2
sometime,
equals 50.
Sometimes you have to say 375. Sometimes you can do 425.
Well, the wines that you have now, the winery is all focused in Tuscany.
Yes.
And we should talk about the wines, because while we're businessmen as well, passionate about food,
sure.
And where we come together, and what we're talking about today is wine. Your wines are all from Tuscany. And the
yes.
primary grape in Tuscany is Sangiovese.
Sangiovese, yes.
Now, we've tasted, of course, all of your wines just now, but we've tasted them also in prior vintages. And you said something to me that I thought was very interesting, and Mark and I have said this as well, that Sangiovese in general is overall a very broad and versatile wine with food. Now everybody says
absolutely.
That. I want to preface this by saying that everybody says this. You know, I mean, like guys who make big, powerful Cabernet Sauvignon from California that only goes with steak say, "Oh, it's a very broad wine with food." And I always want to say, "No, it's not." You know, it's but Sangiovese really is has a broad application with food, with fish, with meat, with cheese.
Of all the grapes, one of the things that you said earlier, and I totally agree, of all the grapes in the world, there are none like Sangiovese that go with as many different types of food.
I agree 100%.
So, and why is that?
Because of the acidity of the wine.
Uh-huh.
Because the acidity of the grapes. The acidity of the Sangiovese is, I don't want to say unique, but almost unique. Wine that you can today we have tasted 11 kind of different wines,
right,
okay,
right,
some 100% Sangiovese, some with blend with Cabernet Sauvignon,
right,
very small quantity,
right,
because I don't want to destroy the typicity
of the Sangiovese,
okay, and also because by law we cannot do Chianti Classico with 50% Sangiovese.
Well, I think that one of the things that's also interesting to me about Sangiovese that a lot of folks don't realize, I mean, we teach wine classes where we talk about this kind of thing. Something people, I think, are very surprised about, we always talk about how the soil, like, it expresses terroir, which means it just, you know, tells you where it's from. And people are familiar with that if you know anything about Burgundy, because people, when you talk about a Burgundy, you'll say one wine is a Maurice Saint-Denis,
sure.
and another one is,
yes.
is a Gevrey Chambertin. And those
and
are
places may only be 5 miles apart, but yet the wines are completely different.
And those are names of villages. They're not names of grapes. And Sangiovese has the same sort of a thing within Tuscany. But I want to ask you a broader question. One of the things I've found so fascinating about Sangiovese is very, very, very rarely do I encounter a non-Italian Sangiovese that is in any way as delicious. There was a Cambria in California many years ago made a few vintages of a Sangiovese.
Yes,
that was
of course.
But almost, you know, you get Cabernet, which comes from Bordeaux and some also from Carmignano in Italy. You find that all over the world. You find Pinot Noir all over the world. You find Chardonnay all over the world. You find Riesling all over the world.
I agree.
Sangiovese, Tuscany.
Yeah.
Why does it not translate?
You know better than I do that there were so many people that planted Sangiovese in California.
Yeah.
And they failed.
Yeah,
it's not the same Sangiovese. I can tell you name, but I don't want to mention. There are people that they planted Sangiovese and now they are taking off or craft with another quality of of grapes.
And they got behind it too. Produced the wine, they sell it, they had a marketing. They used to call them Calitals. And they you don't see them anymore.
I remember. No. There was also something different. We use, with our Sangiovese, we use the wood in a very gentle way. Mm. Okay? I can tell you the name of the first company or winery in California that planted Sangiovese was Robert Pepe.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you remember.
I know where
and,
I'm talking about.
But they blend the Sangiovese with Cab, and they overrock the Sangiovese. So right. I think that the best way, first of all, the climate is completely different.
Right, warm.
In California.
Very hot.
Yes, very hot, but not only that. In California, they irrigate it sometimes.
Yep.
We cannot irrigate it by law.
Right.
And overall, their terroir, the ground, is very salty because of the ocean.
Right, right.
So it's completely different. Even if you plant, because there was a lot of people that they planted the same clone of Sangiovese. They bought the vines here in Italy, and they planted there, and they failed. You know that.
Well, along those same lines, I mean, I think that clearly you're a believer, as we are, that Sangiovese, where you plant it, is going to be completely different. You have vineyards and estates in different regions of Tuscany, purposely because they're going to produce different types of Chianti in each of those places.
Yes, but because if you look around, if you go around in Toscana, you can find from 1 mile to another mile different soil. Stony maybe in Rada in Chianti, where we produce the Chianti Classico, and very clay in Castelnuovo Bernardenga, where we produce the Chianti Superiore. So you have also the altitude, also the round hill that you have in Toscana, you don't have in other part of the world.
You know, I remember one of the funniest things I ever heard about somebody talking about how when people take grapes from one part of the world and they bring them to California and they put them in the bright sunshine and they add a lot of oak to them, and they said, you know, making a wine like this is sort of like playing piano with a hammer. It just doesn't sound very good. So, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by the glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We are here at Vinitaly in Verona, and we're talking with Leonello Marchese. He's a producer of Tuscan wines, and you have 3 different properties, Leonello, in Tuscany.
Correct.
All mostly Sangiovese. The wines are all mostly Sangiovese.
Yes.
We were talking about terroir before, and I don't think that people can see, unless you show them, how Sangiovese can be, how wines can be different, though they're the same grape from one place to another. We drank, 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago, we drank a Brunello 2004 from...
Correct, from
one
Montalcino.
Of your properties, from Montalcino.
Yes.
And we also drank a Chianti Reserva 2004.
Yes, but from Rada.
And would you say those wines were made similarly as wines? Or were there different
wine
things done to the wine as well?
Wine is made at the same way that we produce the Brunello di Montalcino. Mm-hmm. The difference is the way how we age the wine.
Right.
You know, the Chianti Classico, and also, like, this is the most important thing, where the vines are cultivated, because it's important.
Uh-huh.
Just you can see. In Rada in Chianti, where we produce the Chianti Classico Riserva and the Chianti Classico, it's a very stony soil, a beautiful altitude. The exposition of the vineyards are perfect at the sun.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing in Montalcino, where we produce the Brunello di Montalcino, but of course the soil is completely different.
But right. the wines were so different that I'm not sure that an inexperienced person would be even able to tell you they were the same grape. They're experienced people, obviously we know it's Sangiovese, but the wines are different. They show different.
Don't forget that in the Brunello di Montalcino it's 100% Sangiovese. And you have only the taste of the real taste mm-hmm. of the Sangiovese. The Chianti Classico Riserva, it's a blend, 85% Sangiovese, because by law...
Must be 85%.
But we have also 15% Cabernet Sauvignon or Merlot. It depends on the vintage. And I play with the Cabernet and Merlot. Mm. The law allows me to use this blend. And I play, and the 2004, as I said before, has been one of the best vintage in the last 10 years. I use more Merlot than Cabernet Sauvignon.
Mm-hmm.
And the Merlot gave to the wine, to the Sangiovese, it's a good marriage, round, elegant, long in mouth, perfect for the food, and big match with the food.
When you come to certain producers, you learn to trust those producers, and while the wines will be different from vintage to vintage, usually you can count on a certain level of quality depending on
Absolutely,
the producer.
Absolutely, yes.
So we talk about vineyard management and things that producers can do in different years, whether a year's a good year or a bad year. But you kind of took that to the next level in 2002, which you felt was not a great vintage and that your wines were not going to be typical of your style. So how did you manage your 2002?
We sold the juice. Because I realized that there was so big difference in between one winery to another winery, and the quality of the wine was not at the level that I would like to have my wine in the bottle.
Not good enough to have your name on it.
Is wine the favorite thing that you do? I mean, that takes you meet a lot of people. I know you've done a lot of wine dinners.
That's the most fun part of my business, is to talk with the people and to talk to the people about me and my wines.
Now, this is a wine fair that starts on Thursday, and it goes Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday?
Correct.
And on Thursday, it's almost all professionals, and a lot of work gets done. And then today, on Friday, it's mostly professionals.
Yes.
And a lot of work. Uh-huh.
But Sunday will be completely drunk people. Sorry to say.
Sorry, but it's true. So will you see...
I may be a drunk person on Sunday. I just won't be here.
You can try the wines of Leonello Marchese. You can find out about them at our website. The properties are the Castello di Monasterio, Col di Sole, Poggio alle Sugheri, and we'll put those links up at restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, recorded from Vin Italy in Verona on WCTCAM and restaurantguysradio.com.
Fascinating experience at Vin Italy, and I love taking the show abroad. I mean, I think that one of the perspectives we bring as the restaurant guys is to talk about what we do every day here. I like connecting the dots to the source of things.
For all of you people at home, this was a business trip for us.
Yeah.
This was a wine tasting trip for us where we got to do the restaurant guys show and kind of bring you into our business trip and the people we were meeting and the things that we're doing while we're here.
You know, one of the funny things about Leonello Marchese is as his fortune was not made in wine. His fortune was made in, he invented something that has to do with the seatbelt. And every seatbelt everywhere in the world, like Leonello Marchese gets a nickel.
You know, I mean, it's like GM has to buy all their seatbelts from Leonello Marchese.
Or some piece of all the seatbelts in the world go to Leonello Marchese. I'm exaggerating a little, but not a lot. Okay? So every time you buckle up, Leonello Marchese gets a nickel, right? So you can make great wine with the fortune. And it's funny, I told him after this whole thing and we turned off the recording equipment, he said, well, you know, maybe we can do a wine dinner at your restaurant sometime. I said, when you're in America, you call us up. But the thing is, if he does a wine dinner at the restaurant, I want to have seatbelts on all the seats. I want people to buckle. I want people to buckle in. All right, I really don't want to do that. Anyway, I hope that you've enjoyed the hour as much as we have listening to The Restaurant Guys. I am Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascoe.
We are The Restaurant Guys on WCTCAM and restaurantguysradio.com.